Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the regular commission meeting of November 17th, the Board of Commission, and ask you to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Here.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Commissioner Koontz?
Here.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Here.
Commissioner Wardle is not excused. Commissioner Aaron?
Here.
Thank you. Commissioners, before you is the agenda for tonight. Are there any corrections or deletions? If not, I look for a motion to approve.
Move.
A motion, second?
Second.
Motion, a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. We're now down to the consent agenda.
I like that motion, Chair.
Mr. Aaron.
I move to approve the consent agenda and all items contained therein and authorize the County Administrator to sign the attached items on behalf of the Board of Commissioners.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the consent agenda motion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Koontz?
Yes.
We're now down to the portion of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commission has 3 minutes. Please come forward, state your name, and the floor is yours. Second call for public comment. Seeing none, our first appearance is the director of the Friendship Center of Emmett County. And she's here.
Hi, good evening. My name is Denise Smith, and I'm the executive director of the Friendship Centers of Emmett County. I have been in this role just a little bit over 5 years. Before I get into my presentation, I want to let you know a little bit about myself. Was raised in Indian River, graduated from Inland Lakes. Went on to pursue my bachelor's of social work from Ferris. From there, married, and my husband and I have been married for 29 years. We own a centennial farm in Atlanta. We have cows and goats and chickens and all of it. I have two sets of twins, boy girl twins, natural. Everyone asks that question. And I have a grandson now, so that's really very cool. I'm really happy to be here tonight to explain to you, to give you information about the services that we provide at Friendship Centers. I've been in this role a little bit over 5 years. When I first started, I was like, wow, what did I do to deserve such a great job and position working with seniors? And then COVID hit. And it was like, oh gosh, okay, well, let's recalculate here and pivot a little bit to do services differently. So we just reopened all of our centers in January of this year because, as you know, seniors were at the highest risk of being hospitalized and possibly losing their lives. So we took it very seriously. And so we're just now getting back to normal, if you will. So let's go ahead and go through my little presentation here. Our mission is to ensure that all senior citizens have the opportunities, information, and services necessary to live healthy, safe, and active lives in dignity. Just a little bit about historical perspective. In the 1960s, friends in this area decided to organize because they were feeling isolated. So they organized. They were actually meeting where the jail, the new addition right. of the jail is now yeah. on Lake Street, and they met there for several years. In 1965, the Older Americans Act was passed, and that was really, really important time for senior citizens because before then, really nobody recognized the importance of socialization and coming together for seniors. And so that the Older Americans Act has actually been revised like 13 times since its inception. And that really provided some funding and a priority about serving seniors. We incorporated in 1967, January 13th of 1967, we became a nonprofit serving Emmett County seniors. We hired our first full-time director in 1970. And this year marks our 50th anniversary of providing Meals on Wheels to Emmett County seniors. In 1973, the Older Americans Act was reauthorized, and what that meant was that some changes occurred to that law. It really broadened the perspective. So before that time, everything was really federally mandated. There was a big push on federal mandates. At that time, what they decided was, let's let local agencies deal with these kinds of issues and really tailor make a program for seniors. So at that point, the Area Agency on Aging was developed, which I know that you guys have had a presentation from before out of Traverse City. It's a regional entity that covers, you know, several counties. We are happen to be Region 10. And at that time, what the feds decided was that although we're going to authorize an Area Agency on Aging for your region, that they were really geared to be the leadership for folks. So they weren't there to provide direct service, but they relied on local entities to do that. So the next year, it was decided that all of the counties in Michigan had to designate a council on aging, somebody to address the needs of senior citizens. It started out with congregate meals and Meals on Wheels, and from there developed into different kinds of programs. So that's what happened in 1974. We were designated as the Council on Aging. We took on that responsibility. And then in 1975, the Title VI grant actually provided funds for us to open Pelston, Alanson, and Harbor Springs. Our bus service began in 1976, and we began discussion on a millage in 1976. The federal government was getting away from funding these programs, and they really wanted local entities to find a way to fund these programs locally. So that began in 1976. In 1978, we incorporated all of our satellite centers, and they became part of Friendship Centers of Emmett County. And then in 1990, we began to lobby for a millage in 1986. In 1990, the millage was passed. In 1999, we didn't have a permanent home. We were dispersed throughout the county. Our Meals on Wheels were in one location. Our administration was in another location. And so we began a capital campaign under the direction of Sue Engel to find a permanent home. And so our permanent home, as you know, is on Anderson Road on your way to Walmart. And we opened that center in December of 1999. And then in 2001, the Michigan Department of Transportation funded our bus garage so that we could have a place to store our buses. And then in 2002, Harbor Springs decided they wanted to become independent from us. So they did. They became their own nonprofit. And then in 2009, we opened our Huber Center, which is in Brutus. That was through a donation from a local citizen in Emmett County. They donated the entire property and building and renovated it for us to use. And then in 2021, we did not renew our lease with the Pelston Center. So the Pelston Center was kind of a unique situation. We had a lease with the village for a space there. But the centers are like 4 miles apart. And so attendance really started to drop at Pelston, and we really took a hard look through COVID, like what can we do here? And so we decided at that point not to renew our lease at Pelston. Instead, we merged the Pelston Center with the Brutus Center so that we could really focus in and provide some robust services in the North County. So the fast facts, a couple things I just want to point out here is that we provide community-based services. They're person-centered and labor-intensive. So just to give you perspective, I just want to make sure my numbers are correct here. The average cost of assisted living in Michigan is about $4,500 a month. No insurance covers assisted living. Nursing home care is about an average of $9,000 a month. That, of course, can be, you know, supplemented through insurance and reimbursed through insurance. We provide in-home care services for BAC, personal care is what we call it, respite care. So if your caregiver, you know, needs to step away to go grocery shopping or needs a break, and we provide homemaker services like duty housekeeping. And we ask for $18 an hour for those services. However, I want to note, and that's on the next slide, we never turn any senior away for an inability to contribute or donate to us. That's super important to us. We provide services to those 60 and over since 1967. We are the designated council on aging. We have a board of directors. In fact, I just came from our board of directors meeting just now. And we really are the community focal point for seniors. We really try to tap in. If we don't provide the resource, we really try to find all the resources in the community to help seniors. And so I'm just going to go into these, what we offer really quickly. So food services. We serve congregate meals in Petoskey and Brutus Monday through Friday. It's a suggested meal donation of $3. It actually costs us about $15.58 to put together a meal. But we ask for $3. We never, ever get $3 a meal. So we are required by the state to have folks sign in when they get there for the meal. And we never have... We never have gotten $3 per person ever. That's just how it is. We also, we do provide Meals on Wheels in the county throughout all of Emmett County, Monday through Friday. It's also a suggested donation of $3 a meal. And we provide frozen meals on the weekends and a breakfast bag for those who want it. We travel a lot of miles per day. In fact, we serve probably about 150 meals on wheels each day. And that's not counting any of our congregate meals. Transportation, as you know, has become a big issue in our county. We provide transportation to senior citizens and disabled, and that is kind of a condition of the specialized services grant that we receive from the state. We ask for $2.50 or $2 a ride, depending on where you're coming from. If you're in Petoskey, it's $2. Out of Petoskey, it's $2.50. That's one way. All of our buses and vans are handicap accessible with lifts and everything. Those are supplied to us through the Michigan Department of Transportation. And our drivers assist with boarding and deboarding, you know, the transfer of groceries, all that stuff that goes into it. And again, that's just within Emmett County. Our health services support, some of the things on here, I'm sure that you've all had a chance to look at it, so I'm not going to read you off all these things, but some of the things that I'm most proud of that we provide for the community, medical equipment loan closet. So we have a shed out behind our building where we accept donations of walkers, wheelchairs, crutches, canes, bath chairs, and bedside commodes. And folks can come and check those out. They don't have to leave us their name or anything. They could use them for as long as they need to and bring them back when they're done. The other thing that's really important here is our personal emergency response system loan program. So basically it's kind of like, I've fallen and I can't get up button. And that dials directly to 911. You have to have a landline to be compatible, which we're finding is becoming more challenging these days. But that's a program that we provide for free. And then the Project Fresh Farm to Senior, we provide coupons for low-income seniors to then go to local farm markets to be able to buy produce. The other thing is that we provide free incontinence supplies. Now, you might not think that that's a really important thing, but it is. I cannot tell you how many seniors, young and old seniors, really come in and access our incontinence supplies. In-home services, we provide three specialized areas. Respite, as I said, is the caregiver assistance, personal care, baths, grooming, that kind of thing in your home, and homemaker care, which is the most that's the most requested service out of our in-home services. That's, you know, folks who can't really, I mean, think about it, push a vacuum. They can't mop their floors anymore. They can't see good enough to clean behind their toilets or to make sure that things are sanitary. We just, in the last probably 3 years, implemented a social work program. So this person heads up our senior essential needs one. So if there is something that a senior needs that they can't afford, that's essential, medication, help with utilities, eyeglass help, sometimes dentures, those kinds of things. We have a fund, actually, we work with the Community Foundation, and we have a fund set aside for folks to be able to access that. This program has been super busy lately because it's Medicare enrollment time, re-enrollment time, and so she meets with folks and goes through their insurance plan and outlines Medicare and the supplemental program, kind of a complicated endeavor. And so that's been super busy lately. And then just general education and resource referral for folks, whatever they need. Our retired senior volunteer program, prior to COVID, we logged 35,000 hours of volunteer time. So those are seniors who are 55 and over, who are helping other agencies in our community. They're at the Women's Resource Center helping doing mailings. They're at the schools reading to kids. They're at the hospital helping folks get from one end of the hospital to the other. And that is, we do actually serve Charlevoix and Emmett County, and you have to be 55 and over to participate. Our enrichment programs are really robust these days. There are older seniors and younger seniors, and they don't have the same interests. So it's really important to us to make sure that we offer something for everyone. One of our really super super popular programs is our cardio drumming, if you would believe it. So Mondays and Thursdays, our center is, as my kids would say, popping. They have giant balls and they have drumsticks and they're beating to the beat of YMCA and all sorts of things. And there's probably like 30 people in there. I mean, they're doing it. They're busy, and they love it. Another thing is our recreational outings. So during COVID, we realized that it wasn't safe to bring a bunch of seniors together in a room to, you know, socialize and have some fun. So we really had to think outside of the box. So we upped our recreational offerings, and these past couple of years we've done, in the winter, we've done like snowshoeing, bird watching, some of those things. In the summer, they do kayaking, they do hikes, they do plant identification. We did a field trip to the fish hatchery where we learned about how fish are produced and spread all over the state. It's super important for seniors because they still want to be educated and learn, and they want to be active in their community. So this is a good way for them. Another very robust offering was our Senior Golf League. We had over 80 participants who took advantage of our program Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have agreements set up with all kinds of different golf courses, all different golf courses throughout our county. And they get a discounted rate for coming to play there. And it was very well attended. So some of our special offerings, these are situations where, like, we hear that a senior or a group of seniors are interested in a particular topic or issue. We actually worked with Alcona Health this year to do distribution of COVID tests. So they gave us tests for free. We distributed them to seniors. Last I knew, we gave out about 350 tests. So that was important to them. We kind of took over the Senior Expo. Prior to now, it was kind of an agreement with Petoskey News Review, and we decided that we wanted to make it what we wanted to make it. And so we did the Senior Expo this year at Central Elementary School. diabetes prevention. In January, we're beginning a series about cooking for one. So a lot of seniors, you know, they don't want to cook just one meal, or they don't want to cook a bunch of food and then eat it every day for a week or whatever. So we're going to challenge them to think differently and to, you know, how they can cook healthily for one or two. So I'm incredibly proud of the services that we provide, and I hope you are too, actually. This is your Council on Aging, your county representative for seniors in the community. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be here. Did you have any questions?
Any questions?
As we know, the county or the community or maybe the whole country is having worker shortages. Our nursing home is really stressed. Because you offer in-home services and other services that are skilled, what are your challenges and how are you navigating that?
I appreciate that question. So looking forward, as the baby boomer generation continues to age and grow, you know, we're adding thousands of people to the fold every day, and that's challenging. We experience the same challenges in hiring that everybody else does. The unfortunate part of that is we don't offer a signing bonus. A lot of places do, and that is enticing to folks. We have had to take a look at our wages and raise them to be competitive with the local market. We definitely are always watching what's going on and
you
talking
have,
with our
you
staff.
Have unfilled positions in FEMA type work.
We do.
That's what I was
wondering. Yeah. In fact, we have two positions posted right now for home health aides, and ours is a little different. They don't have to be a SENA. The state just requires that they have previous experience working with seniors, and then we can do some specialized training, so that helps. But yeah, it's definitely a struggle. The other thing, you know, finding workers to do meals on meals, that's a struggle.
Right. One more quick question. A couple months back, we approved the allocation of up to $450,000 for transportation to ARPA funds. And Commissioner Kuntz's proposal, we included a provision in there that said that we would work or seek out discussions with the Friendship Center, the tribe, and the college. I don't know if I'm sure they haven't had time to do that, but can you tell us your thoughts about expanded transportation to Friendship Center?
So I have to stick with what my board of directors directs me about that, and that is that we're in the business of serving seniors. We are not in the business of transportation. We got into the business of transportation because there was no local transportation system. And we believe like we have all we can handle. That's another area where we've had a hard time hiring people. You'll look at our stats and see that our rides were down last year, and it wasn't because of demand. It was because we couldn't hire a second or third driver to be on the road. So it's a tough, tough business, transportation. And then, you know, seniors have special needs. So that's a whole nother layer to add to it. They need help maybe getting out of their house and down their, you know, walkway and carrying their groceries. And, you know, I know that in the past that's been kind of an issue. It takes longer to get them where they need to go because of those reasons. So when you start to add all that up, it really it's difficult.
Appreciate your answer. About 2/3 of the Straits Regional Ride passengers that serve Emmett are seniors or disabled, or seniors and disabled, so their population is similar, but I appreciate your honesty on this. Thank you.
So, I know you provide sort of get up and go services, bathing and dressing and that kind of stuff, and meals on wheels, and there's that's approaching in-home care, but it's not really quite in-home care, right, for some of the rooms in-home care. And for the population that can't pay $4,000 or $5,000 a month for assisted living, but isn't quite ready for a nursing, or doesn't quite qualify for a nursing home, it seems like there's a need for an expanded service which isn't quite assisted living keep people in their homes, but a little bit more than get them up and get them dressed.
Yeah.
Is there any way that might be addressed, or is that on the horizon or anything like that?
Well, here's the challenge with that. The challenge is that the state of Michigan has decided, with regard to Medicaid specifically, so folks who are low income, who have a need, qualify for Medicaid, there are many, many hoops to jump through that nonprofits cannot afford to do.
Yeah.
So they require us to, like, log into the system and input all of our people and then do electronic visit verification, which is expensive. We don't have the technology to do that or the money to do that. So we have decided, we decided a few years ago, just prior to COVID, to really define the services that we can provide. And what we decided that we can do, based on the operating standards of not having to require a SENA, but just a person who's had previous experience with seniors, is that we needed to really focus on simple assistive care. Mm-hmm. That's really all we can do. So there's like a continuum, right? So here's, you need no care. Here you need a nursing home. We're at the beginning of that care. Yeah. We're providing you just basic minimum stuff that you can do to stay in your home. And then we refer out for the rest of it. Now, AAA, Area Agency on Aging of Northwest Michigan, they have services available under what's called a Medicaid waiver program. Mm-hmm. And that allows folks who normally probably should be in a nursing home or assisted living to qualify for care and have it paid through them. Of course, the waiting list is long.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just mentioned my wife was over there yesterday inquiring about her friend who lived in Charlevoix County, so you couldn't help. She was really quite impressed with the quality and the kindness and the help of the staff that was over there. So.
I appreciate that because I work very hard to make sure that my staff are patient, compassionate, and caring when it comes to these things.
I've got a few, and of course I'm going to be finance questions.
Sure. Well, let me just tell you, my finance guy is not here with me, but I'll do my very best.
If you can't answer me, you can run to lawyer.
Yes, I will get back to you, absolutely.
You have federal and state funding. Federal funding is the Older Americans Act, I think.
Part of it is. So our state funding is, we get some through Title III, through AAA. We get some from Michigan Department of Transportation for, you know, transportation. And then our RSVP program, the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, is also a state-funded program.
Okay. And you've gotten some extra Meals on Wheels money from AAA, correct?
We did. Actually, there was some extra, but we were able to switch the funding from our congregate meals, since we weren't providing those, to our Meals on Wheels home-delivered meals.
Right.
Yes.
And that'll show up, that was this year, so that'll show up in the next year's audit,
right? Yes. In fact, we just reviewed our audit with our auditors today.
You had a loss of sale and disposal of fixed assets under revenue and reclassification, a negative $17,411. It shows it's a negative in revenue.
I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to.
It's on page 4 of the audit. It says loss on sale and disposal of fixed assets, $17,411, and it's under the revenue and reclassification for program fee for service, special events, and then you have a negative.
Oh, yeah. So our client contributions obviously were down last year, and that would be attributed to that. So,
but this is disposal of fixed assets.
I'll have to get back to you on that.
That's one for Mr. Boyer. And then my final question is, do you know what your fund balance was at the end of the
I believe we were pretty much even. Yeah, my CFO was really proud because he was like $500 within what we budgeted from.
No, the fund balance.
What
you have a fund balance carry forward.
We are not, as a nonprofit.
You can't carry anything forward?
No. No.
And your investments, I assume, are for building your fund.
There's some designated funds for building expansion.
Okay.
And then there's some building maintenance, yeah.
All right. That's all the questions I have. Any other questions? We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is the top of Michigan's Trails comment. Mr. Boyer.
So Colin's here tonight. He wants to give us a little update on electric bikes and the county council.
Mr. Chair, I need to take a 5-minute break. I'm not asking for the board to take a 5-minute break, but I will be back in 5 minutes.
That's fine.
We've got that bill in our packet.
I know.
I don't need it. I've got a ring in front of me.
I'll take it.
So, I'll read you my little letter first here. Hello, my name is Bill Prawl. I'm the Safety Maintenance Director for the Top Michigan Trails Council. And thank you for allowing me a little bit of time to discuss electric bicycles with regard to the non-motorized pathways in Emmett County. I'd like to have a little educational talk regarding e-bikes on the bike trail and the Michigan state law. In January of 2018, the state of Michigan passed a state law regarding electric bicycles. Class 1 pedal assist bikes with a maximum speed of 20 miles per hour, via motor only assist while pedaling, are deemed bicycles by the state law and are allowed on non-motorized bicycle paths in the state of Michigan. The law does not permit Class 2 e-bikes with a top speed of 20 miles per hour, but don't require pedaling to get electric motor assistance. These are really throttle-driven scooters. Class 3 e-bikes with a top speed of 28 miles per hour, but do require pedaling to get motor assistance, are deemed to be too fast on the non-motorized trails to be safe for walkers and joggers and other bicyclists. The original concept of non-motorized trails was to aid the population in having safe places to walk, ride bikes, etc. In other words, the concept was to help provide spaces where citizens, adults, and children can improve their health without the worry of motorized vehicles. This is a sign that we've made up that relays that information regarding the state law. So we have here maximum speed of motor, class 1 bike, 20 miles an hour. Motor assist only when pedaling, yes. Are they permitted on the Little Traverse Wheelway? Yes, per this Michigan state law. Class 2 e-bikes, they're 20 miles an hour, stop top speed. The motor assist only that while pedaling? No, it doesn't. You can throttle this. Are they permitted on the Little Traverse Wheelway or the bike path, like the Northwest State Trail? No, they're not. Again, per this state law. Class 3 e-bikes, they go 28 miles an hour. They do require that you pedal to get that assistance, but they are also not permitted because the state said that's too fast to be out there mixing with walkers and dog walkers and joggers and everybody else. I'm bringing this up because the situation with electric vehicles on the non-motorized trails is getting more and more an issue. And it's not just the bikes. You may have seen these one-wheeler, like a skateboard with a big electric wheel in the center of them. They'll go 19 miles an hour, and they have no human-powered aspect to them at all. And they're pretty crazy out there on the trail, too. So we're trying to educate people about them. We're trying to get these signs up at the trailheads in order that we can just educate people. A lot of people don't know what e-bikes they're on. They don't have any idea. And the guy that sold it to them might not have said, hey, you know, these are not legal on the bike path. But, and there's no enforcement. The state made a law and absolutely no enforcement. When they open the gates, that's
twisting, I said, but here we go. The Wild West out there with electric vehicles. When people gave their easements for the trail to go through their properties, they gave their easements with the understanding that they were giving this easement for a non-motorized trail. And now we're getting motorized vehicles on the trail. If I was one of those homeowners, I'd probably say, wait a minute, I didn't say we want scooters out there. Any questions? I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'm just curious. So I ride that section from like Spring Lake Park North up to town, maybe once a week or so. I don't recall seeing an e-bike on there, but when I drive through town, I see it a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of e-bikes they have. But I see them. And I was just thinking about this, how they're going to interact and how we're going to figure that out.
Yeah.
And have there been complaints or have there been issues?
Yeah, we've got complaints at the Trails Company. I haven't heard, because I'm a safety maintenance guy, I usually hear about accidents, and we have a lot of accidents on the bike path, but I haven't heard about e-bike-related accidents yet. I do know of some other serious accidents on other trails that were caused. Some of the e-bikes weigh 80 pounds. They're basically a lightweight motorcycle.
Yep.
And if you're out dog walking and you're hit by one of those, you can get some real serious injuries. There's a lot of ways to get injured on a bicycle anyway.
Yeah.
We without e-bikes, bike collisions and everything else, and we try to help with giving people some parameters and guidelines out there how they should behave on the bike. But you still have accidents. Some of the accidents that are the worst are where you have a car-bicycle accident. Mm-hmm. And there's some sections of the trail that are really susceptible to that, and we've been working with MDOT and trying to correct some of those situations. Through signage and trying to get maybe some alternative trail sections. Speaking specifically of the place where the bike path is utilizing the shoulder of Highway MR-19 just beyond Hoskins Canyon, of course, that's probably our most dangerous section of the whole trail. And it's very ironic because the guy that's responsible for being a bike path here, Fred Fettis, if some of you remember Fred, his goal was to get kids safely to the state park. Just before the state park, you know, you're on the shoulder of the highway. You've got two-way bike traffic on the shoulder of the highway, which is not at all recommended. But if we could get the sewer easement and push that trail back off the road and get a median in there, separation would be great. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we're working with MDOT and trying to get some around there. And then the Bayview sidewalk is another place we've been working pretty hard with.
Pretty narrow there.
Yeah, narrow the sidewalk. And again, sidewalks and road shoulders are not recommended. If you look at the Ashto bike guide, they're not recommended for the bike path.
So without enforcement,
yeah,
it doesn't get state law.
And that's why things like this would just kind of be education.
Well, that's the people who will obey that.
Will they obey it?
The people that don't care about
right.
The sound
of it. Well, you know, when I was working with MDOT, I was talking to him. I said, you know, Jay believes in MDOT. I said, you know, we made a state law and there's no way to enforce it. And I showed him this sign. He said, yeah, that kind of looked like it could be enforced. Whereas some of the other smaller little signs that have something about e-bikes and about this big down on the bottom of the sign, nobody reads those, unfortunately. And this educates the guys on e-bikes and the other trail users as well.
Can you talk to the sheriff about this too?
Yeah, I've talked to Pete. In fact, I went to the sign. He said he was going to, I gave him, he took a picture of it, said he was going to go over with his deputies what the law was. But again, you're not going to see the sheriff out there.
Yeah, are they going to be on police e-bikes on the map?
Well, you know, if Patasi still had a bike patrol, that would be ideal, especially along the Marina down in that area, where they could say, hey, you know, the bike really good. But a lot of people don't know that either. I think if people, locally, the bike shops only sell the Class 1, with one exception. They're all Class 2, which are not allowed. But we need to get people from all over the country to make ready the bikes, and some of them
a real struggle to do anything about it, but we're trying to be educational on it. And that's why I'm talking to you, so that you guys understand. A guy could come in here with a Class 2 bike and say, hey, we want these to be legal on the bike path, and you guys are looking at it. Yeah, let's have a bike. It should be all right. But really, it isn't allowed us to do it well. You can approach the townships the same way, because there is a, if you look at the state law that's attached to these, to the handout I gave you, you'll see that you can bring Class 2 or Class 3 bikes into your trail if you have public hearings. That you want to incorporate them. You can also overrule having Class 1 bikes on your trails if you do the same thing. The Class 1 bikes, typically it's a person, if it's an older person, they may have a bad knee or bad hip. There's a reason that they need that assistance. And most of them are handling it very well. And they're probably traveling 12 to 15 miles an hour top. And they need that assistance. Several guys locally that are in their 80s that are really doing that. But you get some of the younger folks who don't need it, who push it right to the limit. It's hard to get that Class 1 bike to go 20 miles an hour. But on Class 2, all you got to do is pedal it a couple times and then throttle it up and do it on 20 miles an hour. And that's pretty fast. And the safest and best way that you can control a bicycle is when you pedal a bicycle. That would be the best thing. So I just wanted to give you guys a little thought on that new education. And, if you don't have any more questions,
thank
you all.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next item on the agenda, Mr. Boyer.
Thank you. Update for you. As you can see, that our HR department has been busy. We continue to fill jobs. People leave us too, so they're doing a great job. Airport, we've been talking about this project for quite some time. That's coming to a finish right now. All the paving is done, and we just need to probably the rest of the work will be done next spring with the weather that's coming in now. Parks and Recreation, I'm not going to take away from your update, so I won't do that, but we are working and looking right now at some funding that's available. It's called the Spark Grant. It's through the DNR. There's $65 million available. There's $15 million this year, and it's for enhancing the repro system. So between planning and parks and recreation, we're looking at some opportunities there. Commissioner's trainings, with the new commissioners coming on board, we have everyone registered for new training. We're working on the packets, putting the packets together with all the information. They're going to get one thick book with all the department overviews, rules, procedures, policies. One of the things I want to for you to note that on Monday, November 22nd, is our alternate meeting date, and we're going to use that alternate meeting date for our
28th.
November 28th.
Yeah, you said 22nd.
But did I?
Yeah.
I was looking at 2022.
Yeah.
Monday, November 28th, we're going to use that date just to do an overview of departments and give an update. To the new commissioners coming on board, so when we start up in January, they have an idea and we have the ground running.
6 o'clock?
6 o'clock. In here.
You want us to be here, do you?
We'd love it. You can give, I think it's going to be a two-way street that we can talk about how things have been run in the past and what we look forward to in the future. So I think your input would be very important.
Sounded very diplomatic.
Can I be excused?
Yeah.
It's my birthday.
Oh, well, that's fair.
And for budget preparation, we've got everybody scheduled, new commissioners are scheduled to come in.
By the way, Dave, thank you for putting this together. This is a big deal, and I'm glad that you've asked us to come along. But it's a huge amount of work in one evening.
It is, and this is just one day of training. There's going to be multiple trainings as we move forward.
So thank you for this.
ARPA funding. I think we've got everything earmarked right now. We are working on procedures and policies. We hope to have some of those. The one that is the most important to us right now, we'd like to get out as quickly as possible. It's for the city's buildings and the townships to get that money earmarked. So we're working on that policy and procedure. We hope to have that back to you on the 12th so we can get those funds.
Resources. I just wanted, Marty is here tonight. He won an award.
Mr. Boyer. Mr. Would you stand up, Marty?
Sure.
This is a big deal.
All right, now. Come on up, Marty. the homeowners, the Home Building Association of Northwest Michigan puts an award out every year, and it was actually an award started through an employee of Edna County.
Yes.
Dick Crawford, and he was with the county for 32 years. And this is an award that's given out yearly, and this year Marty was a recipient of that for the 2022 Dick Crawford Award for Building Officials, and we appreciate that. And Marty, maybe you can give us a little bit of your background and talk about why you won this award.
Yeah. I started getting involved with the Building Association, the Home Builders Association, probably about 2 or 3 years into my career with the building department. So the early 2000s, Dick said, yeah, go ahead, do it. And I started attending the meetings, getting involved with them, just answering questions for them and trying to build a positive image for the department, which was working. And I started writing an article once a month for their monthly newsletter that they would send out to the membership. And did that for going on close to 4 years. Not because I ran out of articles to write, but maybe because I didn't have time to do them anymore. They took those articles, started sending them on to the Bay City Home Builders Association. The Bay City Home Builders Association also requested to go to publish those in their newsletter. And they finally ended up going also to Preston Federal Lumber for their monthly newsletter. So I learned through the process of those 4 years how to write better. And it was a good experience for me. Our office has been a participant in the home show for many years. Some of you have been there before and have seen our booth there. The Home Builders Association has always welcomed us to that event. They sponsor a tailgate party in September usually to bring people in to get their membership to know other vendors and other folks that are in groups. So we've always participated with the tailgate there too. So it's been a great experience working with them. With Crawford. Was my first building inspector that I dealt with, and I built my first house 20 years before he hired me. He became my supervisor, and he retired, and so, very special for me to win this award, this president of this man. Very special.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Marty, I know that the incoming commissioners, who are terrific for showing up for these things, are going to look forward to your presentation of all of your building code books back to, I think, the log cabin. So I remember your presentation the first time I saw it. I was really impressed. So.
Thank you.
And finally, I was not able to attend, but I know a couple of our commissioners did. They had a wheelway presentation, top of the myth, put a presentation on at Beers Brewery, Toscan, November 15th. I don't know if either of you won the same thing or which one did.
Yeah, Dave and I went, and his wife Beth. The Trails Council, I was on that board for 9 years in what we call the Dark Ages before they really took off. And but the Trails Council has done miraculous things. Its history goes back to the 1970s when people first envisioned the trail system. Frank Bullen, the current executive director, is just outstanding in terms of understanding the history, the complexity, the interrelationships of all of the entities. He gave an excellent presentation to about 50 or 60 people on a couple nights ago. City manager was there, the parks director, the city councilman. So the city of Petoskey is taking a lead in this thing, but Trails Council is really a force for good in Emma County in terms of the trail. I'm on the trail somewhere almost every day. I was behind B&W today. I was out on the wheelway with my dog yesterday. And that trail system has really been impressive. So. And Brent really runs a terrific operation. So that's my story.
Thank you.
Anything
else, Mr. Now fresh from trip to Florida.
That's right. And through a hurricane.
You started in Tampa. Where'd you end up?
We were in Tampa. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, we're on Madeira Beach. the hurricane hit on the other side, but the winds were like 70, 80 miles an hour, so it was not something I'd ever want to be covered. I'll stay in Michigan.
No storm doesn't bother you.
Nope. You can run through that with no issues. All right, so on the financial report for September, currently our revenues are at about 84% of budget. This does not include property tax. The revenues have increased from last year at this time by about $1.6 million. $1 million of that is property taxes. The other, there's about $676,000, that has to do with the airport, and it's mainly fuel sales. So you're going to see that expense also in the airport.
You know, Pam, the other day a jet took off from Pelston and was flying direct to Houston. So you can presume that when he filled his tank in Pelston, he spent an awful lot of money on fuel. And that's not a particularly unusual day in Pelston.
Yeah. And it just seems to be going up, up, and up. And you'll see that when we take a look at the graph. So the expenditures were at about 70% of budget, which normally we would be at about 75. So our expenditures are down. You know, when you take a look at our budgeted numbers, we are up from last year by about $2.8 million, but a lot of that has to do with some of the legal counsel that we've had to have for some of these different things with the airport, also fuel costs at the airport, wages and benefits is part of that. But overall, our budget looks really good. So when you take a look at the airport, again, revenues increased $676,000 and fuel resale. I mean, that's huge. So let's go take a look at the revenue graph, and that I think is on your flash drive. And you'll see when we compare 2020, no, go to the graph. Yeah, right there. So when we compare 2020, which is the center for the airport, we were at $2 million in 2020. This year, we're at $4.7 million in fuel in airport revenues. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Never thought that would happen. When you take a look at everything else is pretty well on target. There's really nothing else that really stands out in the revenues. If you can go to the expenditure graph. So on the expenditure graph, you'll notice that, again, if you look at general government, you know, we're at $3.9 million versus 2020 at $2.9 million. And, again, that has a lot to do with wages benefits. I have broken that out on the summary sheet that I've given you. I don't know if anybody has any questions on any of the budget. There just really isn't a whole lot to give you. Most of it is on the summary sheet that tells you where those differences come in. But we are doing good with the budget.
This is fabulous. By the way, I'll mention it later in the airport report. Priscilla just sent out the numbers, and of course you've seen them. While the revenues are up, the expenses are up, but the gallons from last year to this year, I think, are relatively flat. So to some extent, the increase reflects the per gallon cost of fuel.
Correct.
Any questions for Pam? Seeing none. We'll go from unfinished business or not on to claims. Claims in committee and travel voucher approval.
Chair, I move for the payments of the claims in the amount of $10,772,214.30 and for payment of the committee and travel vouchers in the amount of $7,469.38.
We have a motion for Mrs. Dreyer. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Aaron. Any discussion? Seeing none. Roll call, please.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Kreutz?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes. Motion carries. We're now into new business. First item of business is the 2022 revised apportionment report.
This one's a pretty straightforward. The report is done before the elections. Once election happens, you'll see that Littlefield Township voters approved the 0.35 mils for their library millage. So we had to revise the report. So before you the revised report.
Hello, Chair. I move that the board approve the revised 2022 apportionment report as presented by the Equalization Director.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Pink?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Motion carries. Next on the agenda is the Emmett County Planning Commission Ordinance Amendment.
This is an amendment to the ordinance that created the Planning Commission, and what they were looking at doing is the number of Board of Commissioners serving on the Planning Commission is two, and they want to reflect that in the minutes, and also that there's the way that the Capital Improvement Fund is done. That is done through the County Administrator's Office, not through the Planning Commission, so this is just confirming that the CIP is done through the community and the county administrative office.
I'm going to make the motion. Tammy's here, of course, but I can tell you the Planning Commission, that includes Tony and I, have gone through it line by line, and staff has always been extremely supportive and helpful, and I think this is a good and excellent set of bylaws. It's actually useful to be able to It's useful to do just to remember what all the bylaws say. For example, it doesn't say two or three, it says up to, so it doesn't need to be two, it doesn't need to be three, but it's up to. And as I said at a previous meeting, some governmental bodies, the Planning Commission, reviews the capital improvement plan, and it's the wrong place. So the board is where it needs to be, and I think this is sensible. So I'll just move to approve the amendments to the Emma County Planning Commission ordinance.
I will second, Chair.
There's a motion to second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Poots?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Motion carried. We are now down to the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority introduction of a project loss at Lumber Square.
We have Tammy come up and talk about the loss and what this proposal is.
Thank you. As the Secretary of the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, I stand before you. The Brownfield Redevelopment Authority has been reviewing the lofts at Lumber Square for a couple of years now, I believe. It was introduced most recently for potentially a Brownfield Redevelopment plan. So we at the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority asked that the consultant for our Brownfield Authority come and present to the Board of Commissioners what is being proposed at the lofts and how that relates to this Board of Commissioners, because we will be asking you to set a public hearing next month and coming before you with an actual brownfield plan that has been or will have been reviewed by the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority and the City of Petoskey as well. So if it's all right, Mac McClellan is here on behalf of the Emmett County Brownfield Redevelopment Authority.
Bring that forward.
Yeah, right.
Take the witness stand. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Mac McClellan, the Brownfield consultant for the Emmett County Brownfield Authority. And we can pop up that presentation. I'll kind of run through this pretty quickly. It was in your packet, so happy to answer any questions, but I'll just kind of run through it sort of quickly. This, again, is the Loss on Lumber Square project. I thought I'd also give a little bit of background about Act 31 Brownfield TIF. It's a little unique and distinctive. Talk a little bit about the Brownfield plan, and then go through some next steps. We'll go to a third page, if you like. Some things. This is a unique project. The Petoskey Harbor Springs Community Foundation got involved, and CJ is here from the foundation as well to answer any questions on the project. It's a unique project. I wanted to ensure the opportunity for affordable housing, workforce housing on the site, and so the foundation acquired the property and is working with G.A. Hahn Development. Corey and Andrew are here as well with G.A. Hahn, with experienced developers in workforce housing as well. There's some extraordinary costs associated with the project, some demolition site preparation activities, and a unique opportunity for infrastructure that we wanted to go through. And in this particular case, and I'll go through this a bit, brownfield authorities can capture state taxes. And so for all of these projects, we're able to leverage, in essence, a long-term state grant to be able to capture state taxes to help support the projects. So a pretty important opportunity for it as well. And the whole concept, as you may know, increased incremental taxes generated by the project and generated by the investment in the project. Taxes rise. Those taxes are captured by the brownfield authority and then used to reimburse those extraordinary costs and also, in this case, potentially contribute to an infrastructure project. I think you all know where the location of the site is, on Emmett Street, bounded by Fulton Street, and it's the former Hanke Lumber site. There, a unique opportunity for I think the community. One more. So the proposal is really to build a single unit building, or a single building with 60 units. It'd be a three-story building with a lobby and a community space to support. The primary focus of the project is to provide some long-term workforce housing for it. That'll also include a parking lot with 62 spaces. Slides just to give an idea of the renderings for the project, and those are included in your packet as well. As I mentioned, the brownfield tax increment financing is the investments that are made on that property, right? Increase the taxes, and those are captured for those approved eligible activities that would be coming back to you within the brownfield plan. It's not an abatement. The developer pays the same amount of taxes. Those taxes are just captured and then reimbursed for those extraordinary costs until those costs are paid off.
And Mac, once again, the capture, and this PowerPoint is really well done.
Well, thank you.
The capture is just on that piece of property.
Exactly.
Okay,
thank you. Yep. And I'm going to walk through a little bit of the difference between DDA TIFs and brownfield TIFs.
That's
sometimes
important.
They get confused.
Really,
and so, coming up to the next slide. There's a few differences between DDA TIFs and brownfield TIFs. One is that DDA TIFs can only capture local taxes. And with a brownfield plan, this is a great opportunity. It can also capture intermediate school district taxes and state taxes, which represent 45 or so percent of the total tax bill on a site, especially on a non-homestead site. So really that creates a great opportunity, as I kind of explained these, is this is a long-term state grant over time. Schools are held harmless. The schools are not affected. They still receive their state foundation grants. And a recent change to the act provided that intermediate school districts are made whole by the state education fund as well. So there's no impact on schools, either the ISD or the Petoskey area schools in this case. The next difference is that DDAs kind of establish a district and then capture tax, increased incremental taxes from that initial year for infrastructure projects or other kinds of things. For a brownfield project, it's only on that specific eligible property. And so only the taxes generated by this project will be available to be captured and reimbursed for the project. Let me go one more. Thank you. DDAs, capture for a set period of time, usually 30 years, and capture those taxes and then develop development plans or have a development plan on what they might do with those captured taxes. In this particular case, on the brownfield plan, we have to decide that up front. You'll have all of the eligible activities, the maximum budget for that. It is kind of a budget document. You set that budget allocation of all the eligible activities that might be included in that. You capture until those costs are paid off. And I will say, this is a budget document, but after the project proceeds, we actually go through each of the invoices that are submitted, make sure that they're eligible activities, and set that maximum eligible activity obligation. So this is the maximum that will be available. It is a conservative budget to make sure that we're covered, and then I anticipate those to be lower. So for brownfield authorities, again, the capture is limited to that period of time that capture happens. There also is an opportunity to capture for another 5 years for the local site remediation fund Petoskey Manufacturing provided some local support, and that provides a great opportunity for the Brownfield Authority to help support projects on the front end of that as well. So we'll go a couple more. And then after that time period, those taxes go back to the taxing jurisdictions. So it's almost like a couple of analogies. One is growing the pie. We don't have to take a set pie and carve off a piece here, and the pie's gone. Each project generates its own pie. A slice of that is taken off, to pay for those eligible activities, and then the rest of the pie goes back to the tax and jurisdiction. Other importantly is DDA investments are typically for public infrastructure, streetscape, things of that nature. In this case, brownfields can help support the capital stack and the revenue stream for a project by reimbursing private eligible activities on the project's those extraordinary costs. Eligible property, there's five qualifications that either has to be contaminated, has contaminants above EGLE standards, be a Part 201 facility. It could be blighted. It could be attractive nuisance or disconnected from utilities. Functionally obsolete, that means that it can no longer be used for its intended purpose. I sort of use the state hospital as a classic example of that. It can no longer be used for its intended purpose on that as well. Or more recently, they had historically designated properties. Because properties that were downtown that still required a whole bunch of work, they weren't contaminated, they weren't blighted, they weren't functionally obsolete, they were still operating. And so if it's designated within a historic district or state or federally designated, it also is brownfield eligible activity, or brownfield eligible property. It could be owned or in control of a land bank authority, kind of a unique thing. There's a qualification under blighted. So for projects that don't quite fit, that's an opportunity for the land bank authority to be involved. And then a brownfield plan has to be approved by the brownfield authority, the governing body, the county board of commissioners, and for a county brownfield authority, the local unit of government has to concur with the brownfield plan. As well. So the city of Petoskey in this case would need to concur with the brownfield. Eligible activities are kind of in two different areas, environmental and non-environmental. Originally when the act was passed in 96, it just dealt with environmental activities. In 2000, they saw there was a whole lot of problems with asbestos abatement and demolition as diseconomies on projects, so they added that. And then later they added for qualified local units of government, like the city of Petoskey, site preparation and infrastructure. So it really expanded those opportunities as well for qualified local units of governments or core communities in that case. There's three primary documents. One is the brownfield plan that we'll be talking about tonight, setting a public hearing and then having that come back to the December 20th meeting. An Act 381 work plan, we have to ask special permission for state tax capture for environmental activities through EGLE and non-environmental activities through MEDC and the Michigan Strategic Fund. And then there's a reimbursement agreement between the brownfield authority and the developer that says essentially, if you do what you said you're going to do, you provide documentation of the eligible activities, you build out whatever you build, and you generate taxes, the Brownfield Authority will capture those taxes and reimburse those costs back to you. It takes 15 pages to say that, but that's essentially what that reimbursement agreement says. If there are local units of government, we'll talk about that. If the other infrastructure projects, the governing body, whoever pays for those infrastructure activities will also be a party to that reimbursement agreement. Kind of laid out what those project eligible activities are. These are for the private activities separated into the environmental activities. And we put some placeholders in there for environmental issues. Don't believe that that's going to be as big of an issue. There is some contamination there. If we can't deal with the big mitigation in this case, there may be some high cost. We may be able just to dig that soil up, take it off, and not have to address that. Non-environmental, again, are in the asbestos abatement demolition activities, site preparation, infrastructure, contingency, and interest. There also is kind of a unique opportunity to help support the Greenways project. The city owns the property railroad right away, right to the west of the property, and can be part of that expansion for that. It's a good selling feature for the state. It will see the trail systems, a good opportunity to extend that Greenway. It's not really a requirement that it has to be done right away, but at least we can have that approval, and then that can be part of the project financing or portion of the project financing. So we kind of set aside a $1 million allocation within the brownfield plan for that, with half of the state, with the state being able to pay for half of that. Great opportunity. The time frame for it, again, we've introduced the project. Here this evening, we did meet with the city council on the 17th, and they're considering the brownfield plan next Monday at their meeting on the 21st as well. So I always like to get the local unit of government concurrence before we go through the process to make sure that they're satisfied with the project as well. And the project has gone through its initial site plan approval through the City Planning Commission, and has to address a couple of other matters, but mostly administrative. Bring the brownfield plan again to the City Commission, the brownfield authority on the 28th, and hopefully coming back to you on the 20th. You have a public hearing that we're requesting you establish this evening for that December 20th meeting, and then we have to notify the taxing jurisdictions as well at least 10 days before that public hearing for the project. The Brownfield Authority will be addressing their reimbursement agreement December 13th at their regular meeting, and then we'll be looking at getting the 3-1-1 plans for both environmental and non-environmental eligible activities done then and submitted to the state. So hopefully we hope to be able to go to the February Michigan Strategic Fund Board meeting for that. There's some unique other financing that MEDC is involved with. We'd like to wrap these things together. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or if there's any questions on the project, either CJ, Corey, or Andrew.
Back to my question. You told us once, since the foundation owns the property, how is this going to be going to apply to them and collect taxes?
Yep, that was one of my initial questions, since it has to be a private project. There will be a separate LLC formed for this, and they're still kind of working out those details, but it will be a private taxpaying entity. And if there's no taxes, there's no obligation to repay those costs either. So it's all based on the success of the project performance base.
You've done a few of these before, right?
This would be my 81st. So I've done a few.
81st?
Yeah, I was formerly the Deputy County Administrator of Grand Traverse County and started the Brownfield Authority there in 1997. And then found that I kind of enjoyed it. So we did about the first 5 or 6 projects, River's Edge, and most of the bigger projects downtown Traverse City. Found that I really enjoyed it, so I went into private consulting. So I've done 81 of these.
Thank you for that.
And I've actually represented the County Authority since the Tosca Manufacturing for the last 22 years or so.
I think of my former life, you did food for us.
And I did some prep for any shirt as well. Just means I'm old, I think, actually.
Chair, I do have a question. Yeah. And I'm, just because I heard him say it at one point. So what if this, at the meeting on the, what is it, November the 21st, what if they vote no or they don't approve of it? Can the project move forward without their approval?
Nope. All 3 parties have to approve the project.
So it really does weigh on the November 21st meeting?
Yes. We have an opportunity, you know, if there are some questions or issues, you know, with respect to that. I think there's another meeting in between the public hearing, between December 20th, that we could come back to the city. And some of you may recall that happened with the Great Lakes Center for the Arts. There were a couple of questions about that. So that went back to the city, you know, a couple of times. We did make that presentation. There was had some conversations, you know, adjusted the brownfield plan accordingly. I think we addressed the issues. They were very supportive of the project. So.
You were involved with the Center for the Arts?
Yes.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that was number 65 probably.
Any other questions for Mayor? Motion in front of us.
Hello, Chair.
Oh, go ahead.
I move to hold a public hearing for the loss of Lumber Square Brownfield Plan and direct the county clerk to notify the public pursuant to the Open Meetings Act and work with the Planning and Zoning Director to notify the taxing jurisdictions pursuant to the Brownfield Redevelopment Financing Act that the public hearing will take place on December 20th, 2022 at 6 p.m.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, roll call.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aarons?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the closeout of the CDB grant, which we had the public hearing on earlier, for MSP 2015-0737-3.
Chair, I'll make that motion. I move to approve the closeout of the CDBG grant MSP-2015-0737-HOA and authorize the county administrator to sign the required documents to facilitate the grant.
Is there a second?
Second. Go ahead.
We have a motion and numerous seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes. Next is a request from our finance director for a budget hearing for a budget amendment.
I'll make that motion, Chair. I move to hold a budget hearing for a budget amendment for FY 2022 and proposed FY 2023 budget and to direct the county clerk to notify the public pursuant to the Open Meetings Act. The hearing will take place on December 12, 2022 at 5:45 p.m. Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion on the budget amendment? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Ayers?
Yes.
Motion carries. Next item is the real estate property exchange agreement between the county, Emmett County, and Tri-State Holding. Mr. Boyer.
Yes, thank you. Tonight, before you, we have something that we discussed in closed session at the last meeting. This is the map up on the screen for you. The easiest way to do this is walk over.
The county currently owns these two pieces of property right here. And we've been working with Tri-State for a period of time. They're looking to pay two pieces of property to the county for two pieces of property that they own. The challenges we kind of looked at as we performed in the site is if Enbridge decides or if that they get the approval to move forward with the tunnel expansion, there's some health and safety concerns on this site. Potentially they will be looking at a line haul road out of there and security of the site. The two lots that we currently own are used for overflow parking for the lighthouse and kind of a picnic area set there. What we looked at is if we were to swap pieces of property, that we have to create that parking lot and make improvements to the site. So what we have proposed to do, and in your package you will see, that the property to the south of the lighthouse right now, Tri-State owns, and they're willing to transfer that property to the county. And there's a proposal in there that shows you the parking lots that will give us 20 parking spaces, paid parking spaces, and four places on that site for motorhomes or buses. We also looked at the piece of property at the end of the road, the little square on the lake, and we own that piece of property right to the right of that, and that's a parking lot and access to the waterfront. It's a great spot. If you haven't been there, the view of the bridge is right there. So we're looking at that piece of property to expand that parking lot so we can have more vehicles down there and pulling more of the front of the line. We also looked in this proposal with Tri-State the ability to expand our parking lots at Headlands Park. Been there right now. We have 49 parking spots, and one of the biggest concerns we've had at Headlands is people having to park a mile away and then walking down through the trails. So what this proposal also gives us funding for the extension of that parking lot. So we, in your proposal, you see the parking lot. We've had a conversation about extending the parking lot there. That gives us another approximately 130 parking spots at Headlands. So we increase Headlands from 49 parking spots, so we have a function in Headlands right now, all of our parking is utilized by that, and people are walking, and this gives us that ability. All of these proposals that we have has been funded through Tri-State to put these estimates together, to put these drawings together. The county has not put any money into this. The proposal that we have in front of you tonight. We have spent a lot of time working back and forth with Tri-State, with our attorneys, working on setting up agreements. When we look at kind of the end results, the county picks up two more parcels of property. Tri-State picks up our two parcels. We expand our parking lot and really create about $1.7 million of investment for the county. This is similar to what we did at Camp Patasiga. We have the pipeline that runs through Camp Patasiga. They provided funding for us to do the expansion. At Camp Patasiga, we're kind of looking at the same function here. The proposal really goes over basically a two-year period at time of transfer of the property. We would take the property and we would get a check for $500,000 initially to do our parking lot improvements on both of the sites. And then in December of 2023, we would get another $1 million donation, and that would give us the ability to do the parking lot expansion at Headland. It would take us about a year to actually do all the design work to get that parking lot designed and ready to go out to bid. All this work would go out to bid for work. We've got the original or the preliminary engineering all done. We have the estimates all done. The next step going forward, we're actually doing the construction documents and then put that out to bid. Steve, I don't know if you want to add into this.
Dave, no, you actually covered it. I don't have anything to add at this point. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
And I'd like to say thanks, Stephen, for I spent a lot of time going back and forth with Tri-State and trying to ensure that this transaction is in the best interest of the county.
Any questions from commissioners?
I have a couple. So we've heard a lot about safety at the Headland. In fact, I'm pretty sure we all got some correspondence fairly recently about that letter. I know we discussed it at Parks and Rec meeting. So would this eliminate a lot of the safety concerns of all the traffic going?
We would hope it would, and also that we talked a little bit earlier in my report that we're looking at the Sparks Grants. Part of the problem that happens is that road coming in, it's really a one-way road in. What this eliminates the visitor nights that people are walking in there, so that may certainly help with that. We also have to look at, and we've spent some money in Ryan too tonight, we've spent some money doing some tree clearing to try to open that road up. That road needs to be expanded, and I think that's one of the things with family, with planning and Parks and Rec that we're looking at the Parks Grant, so there might be some opportunity to begin to do some expansion and also to do some trail connectivity there too. It would certainly be nice to have a walking trail through that part from the main road instead of walking down the road if you want to do that, or bikers coming into the park. There's opportunity to expand that. Yes, it certainly addresses the safety issue because now you can park on site. You're not parking a mile away and walking into the park.
And as of right now, we don't really have any money earmarked or anything in the foreseeable future to address parking because right now we have so much need and capital improvements that are, you know, this.
And if I were to come to this board and say that, hey, we want to spend out of our general fund $1.7 million to do this, I know what my answer would be. So this is an opportunity to do something that needs to be done at someone else's expense.
Right, and then, thank you, I appreciate that. And also, we'd be acquiring homes, right?
Right, and the property just south of the lighthouse, there is a house that Mr. Kies and I toured last week. It's a two-story house. It's basically set up with two different living quarters that are separated, a bathroom, bedroom, kitchen on each one of the floors. We talk about workforce housing and the challenges that we face, and this is an opportunity, one, to be a rental unit or to be something that we can use for workforce housing for people that live up in this park or at Headland, so there would be an opportunity.
Well, and that's smart, too, because I know that we utilize that at Camp Patasiga.
Camp Patasiga, we have a camp manager that runs the house from us.
So we have potential to house employees or generate more revenue for the home, so I see that as a positive. And at the bottom, on the bottom line, there's no cost to the taxpayers, but it's pretty much the entire project.
Exactly.
and
that was the goal of this project. So
that's my question. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have a concern. Administrator Boyer said this is probably going to be a two-year project. Or did I not hear that right?
From construction to completion, yes. In this market that we have right now, to find companies to come in and do the actual work, we've seen at the airport with what's going on there. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge to get.
So my concern is for the board, as I'm looking at the motion, I have no concerns about the project. I think we should move forward with that. But my concern is I don't like some of the wording in this motion. And the reason, what my concern is for, is what I would like to add to it, is to move to approve and authorize the chair of the Board of Commissioners and the county administrator, and then the rest can move forward. My concern is with some of the wording in 2 and 3, and if this is a two-year project, we don't know who will, I guess we do know who's going to be on the board next year, but we don't know who the chair is. And I just would like to make sure that the board is involved in this.
So where it says move to approve and authorize the county administrator to?
I'd like to add the chair of the board in there so that the board has a direct relation to, along with county administrator. And that's, it's either yes or no, but that is my feelings this evening.
Sorry.
If I could just add, any project that I bid on will come back to the board for your approval. We can't do any work out there without board approval.
That somewhat clarifies, because as I read 2 and 3, it looks like all of it is going to weigh on the administrator to go through all, take such actions. What are those actions? If we don't know what those actions are, at least if the chair was involved, the chair of the board would know what those actions were. So that's where my concern. I'm just reading those, not the first part, but as I read the second and third, if the rest of the board has no concern about it, then we can move forward with the motion as is. But,
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to maybe help understand, I help prepare this language, and the idea here is when property is acquired, is conveyed away, when you get to a closing, the title company requires something like this to make sure that the person that sits down at the table and signs the documents is authorized and has been authorized to go through all the due diligence leading up to the closing. Mm-hmm. So really, most of everything involved with these parts of this motion are intended to get the county to the point of a closing and be able to get through the closing and sign all the documents that are needed to get the transaction closed out. If there's usually you would have one party signing. If you add the chair, then we would have two people signing the deeds, which isn't legally necessarily, I suppose there wouldn't be anything wrong with that, to have that on there, just so the board is aware of that. There's no real legal problem with adding the chair. I just want you to understand that this is really put together to get us to the closing, which is expected to happen within a month or two once all the due diligence is wrapped up. We've already completed the environmental due diligence. There's been lead and asbestos checking on the house. Inspection report has been received on that, so a lot of the due diligence is done. This would probably move to a closing relatively fast. And if part of the concern might be with the construction projects, as Mr. Boyer mentioned, that's not part of this. Those that work on the various parks and the parking lots, that's a separate matter. They are mentioned in the agreement as something that the county intends to use these funds for, but it does not provide any sort of right of Tri-State to require the county to use the funds for that. And they're okay with that. It could be a concern that they...
Oh, you're clarifying okay. what I'm thinking, because I'm the one who brought to the board that we should have the administrator authorized to do a lot of the signing for us, because sometimes it's hard for the chair to get in here. But just some of the wording in here has me concerned, but you have clarified. So I still feel concerned about it, but I feel better.
That's a little bit of our hang-up.
Yep. Thank you.
How does this deal made? Basically, spit and handshake. We had no due diligence. We had no contract. We had no due diligence. This is a little bit of a hangover.
It is. And quite honestly, I expect, no, don't take it personally, Administrator Boyer, but 2 years, who knows? I mean, we flipped administrators in less time, so I'm just concerned as we move forward with some of them.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I just celebrated my second year with the county last week, so I hopefully I make it 3 so I can get through this project. So when I say 2 years, all the funding will be in place, and we will be starting construction of hopefully the parking lot M23. So we will be moving forward.
Well, I think explanation given has made me feel better.
Well, Tony is usually one of our most diligent watchers of the way we operate. By the way, Dave and I are going to open up a pop drop company pretty soon. Smith Brothers, we're going to call them.
Just one last question. So if, you know, regardless of what happens with Enbridge and their project with this, we still come out with the same outcome, regardless. So,
this negotiation has been going on for quite some time. Originally, they wanted 2 years before the final thing. Actually, I think it was 3 years.
Before Dave raises his hand, if Tony is a little more comfortable with Steve's help, and thank you for coming up from Farmington. That's what it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If you're ready, I'm going to go ahead and read the motion. Move to approve and authorize the county administrator to, on behalf of Emmett County, one, enter into the real estate property exchange agreement between Emmett County and Tri-State Holdings, LLC, involving tax parcel numbers 15-03-10-427-012, 15-03-10-427-010, 42-03-51-300-024, and 15-03-10-426-008, to take such actions as are called for under the agreement to complete and accept due diligence contingencies for such property exchange and other obligations under said agreement. 3, upon the satisfactory completion of such due diligence contingencies, attend and execute all deeds and other documents at the closing of the transaction under the agreement. And 4, otherwise fulfill the county's obligations under said agreement. It's further acknowledged under this motion that the Board of Commissioners finds that there is no need in this instance to obtain an appraisal, undertake a sealed bid process, or utilize the services of a realtor, considering the county assessor's valuation of the properties involved and the amount of consideration received by the county under the agreement.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Discussion.
You know, apropos of our earlier discussion, the fact that we are taking the assessor's word as to the value of the property, that... We have some history.
Any other discussion?
What effect do you think you all received an email from a resident? I will say that I spent a little over an hour on the phone yesterday and looked for all the concerns there, and I think we answered all the questions.
Any other questions? Any roll call?
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Coon?
No.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner McGill?
Yes.
Thank you, Dave Boyer and Steve, for your time. You know, Neil was telling a true story for a few years, but we don't want to waste your time, but...
We understand.
Next item on the agenda as well, the football coach, we're with you, win or tie. The Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, due to the Dennis Thomas Lee's resignation, this has been posted. An application from David Carbeck.
Chair, I move that we accept David Carbeck's Brownfield Redevelopment Authority appointment.
Second that. Motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Kent?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes. Next item is the Advisory Commission Committee on Aging. We have one application from Michael Bigelow. This has been open for quite some time.
Chair, again, I'll accept Mike, or I would like to propose Michael Bigelow appointment to the Advisory Committee on Aging.
Second. Motion second. Questions, concerns? Roll call.
Commissioner Dreyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Commissioner McGinnis?
Yes.
Commissioner Batchelor?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner
Smith?
Yes.
Any communication from the board? We are now to the part of the committee, on the second meeting, or the committee report. We would like to do the first time.
Relatively brief report,
Mr. Coons.
So the Fair Advisory Board met last week and elected new officers, or not new officers, re-elected our officers. Betsy Squire will be the president, Chris Range will be the vice president, Laura Emery will be the secretary, and Pam Gibson will be the treasurer. Will be and has been. Nothing new. So that's my report for Fair Advisory Board. Thank you.
Sure, I'll go. DPW met the first week for our meeting of November. We reviewed financials and aged accounts, which are looking good these days. We discussed the MICROS grant. I'm not sure if the state come through on the MICROS. Okay. That, we're still waiting. That's still to be determined. The new communications director for Emmett County Recycling has started in her new role, and they're very excited to have her on board. Is she still on board? Excellent. Cool. I just wanted to make sure. So that's great news. I know they're very excited to have her. As Charlie knows, they've been waiting for that. So yeah.
She came from Mackinac Island.
I believe I went to school with her. New hazardous waste RFP has been released, as well as a new curbside truck RFP. And they're conducting market research through at the transfer station on New Baylor for compacting the recycling materials. And the charge account contract was amended to include references prior to allowing the charge account at the transfer station to prevent any future issues. That does it for DPW. Next, I'll do Parks and Recreation. First, we discussed events that were held at the Headlands in October, and revenue for the Headlands, I wanted to note, is up over $12,000 from last year. So that's great news. And from May to October, just over 29,000 vehicles visited the park. The Crooked River locks are wide open and ready for winter. Boat traffic was down this summer compared to last summer for various reasons. Probably everything else has opened up and fuel prices are skyrocketed. So locks are scheduled to be reopened sometime to be determined in April of 23. The Gulpin Point Cottage was rented four times in October, and admission and retail sales remained consistent with last year. The annual Autumn and the Gulpin event had over 150 participants this year, and there were 144 rentals at Camp Petasiga just in October, including four weddings at the rec hall. The campground and facilities have been shut down for the winter, and winterized, and docks have been removed. There's also a shoreline restoration project at Camp Petasiga in partnership with Tippecanoe Watershed Council, where over 60 feet of bioengineered shoreline was installed by over 25 contractors to prevent erosion and create more resilient shoreline. And the fairgrounds hosted five weddings, one miscellaneous event, and four MSU Extension 4-H events. And that is my report.
Hello, Chair. On Friday, November 18th, 10 a.m., I attended a Zoom call with the MAC Transportation Committee meeting. I forwarded on to you again the agenda and the minutes from previous meetings. Just now again, I think I did before, but I just did again. Where we had a speaker from the County Road Association on the impact of electric vehicles on future road projects. If there's less gas tax revenue because of electric vehicles, well, that affects the road funding. So we had a legislative update from Madeline Fata, our MAC Governmental Affairs Associate. There wasn't a whole lot going on through the election and people campaigning and such, so there wasn't much going on. Talked about future meeting topics, general discussion about meetings. We always about to have meetings. Today, I attended an NLEA meeting. Strategic discussion of issues facing the NLEA and facing our county. But I will just read off the officers who are elected to the 2023. The board chairs will be Carolyn Smith. Some people know her name, obviously. He wasn't wearing his paper. Vice Chair is Rich Smith. Jeff Lawson is Secretary. Paul Blum is Treasurer. Immediate past Board Chair Jim Renner. The Executive Committee, Carlin Smith, Jeff Lawson, Paul Blum, Jim Renner, Bill Scott. Finance Committee, Paul Blum, Treasurer. Carlin Smith, Chair, Jim Granger. Anthony County's Commission is different right now. John Boysen, Rich Smith, Vice Chair. Personnel Committee, Jim Rummer, Jeff Lawson, Colin Smith, Paul Long, Bill Scott, Jennifer Hisco, Brian from the Ministry of Extension. House of Disband / NEA Broadband Construction, Robert Jess, Don McDonnelly from Hampton County, Extension from Schwartz County, Paul Long, and Tim Rummer. The county development meetings, we have board members from particular counties that meet 3 to 6 times per year to discuss specific projects and opportunities in their counties. And I'm on the board of the county, as well as our administrator, and Dave Cooley, George Randall, and Red Smith. And we had one of those discussions today, about strategic conversations. The strategic conversation about, is interesting because we have, we were asked some questions about how, what our vision was for the future of our individual counties, and what do we think the evolution of our county would be in the next 3 years, what our needs are, what our challenges are right now, and we're realizing it's such a broad spectrum. you get to try to focus down a little on this part of our cities and towns and villages, or are we talking about the entire county? And because each area of our counties have different needs, and sometimes it's very different communities. And they may not share, you know, one vision for how the county will be going forward. There's a lot of people that like to say no to change. They don't want change. Yet how do you plan for a future that's coming anyway, whether you want to face it or not? You want to help guide things that you want more, or you want to let things happen? So, the communication issues between the people that sit up here and these dioceses and such, people are sitting out there, try to invent, how do we exchange ideas and information most effectively so we can move forward together and not be divided. And some of the challenges we talked about. And we have a very field of our demographics are in the county, which are nice charts in there. I looked at one chart and half of our population is over 40. So that, you know, we have the presentation by the means system, so that just kind of brings it in. We're all getting older. We don't have a lot of young people staying and coming here. And moving as we age, we need more services. Who's going to provide those services? If we don't have a younger population, how many businesses that provide those services? This kind of picture, the way we're going right now, we don't get housing addressed, child care addressed. This is on our shoulders right now. We need to try to get the communication going and to really point out to people, this is coming whether you want it or not. How well do you want to be prepared? It's on us to try to at least get the discussion going, try to do it in the most effective way. So the NLEA is, as a region, and we have to work together as a region. The counties are very different in a lot of aspects. From budgets to population to how we do things is different. So we have, that's a good thing we have an organization like NLEA to get us around the mindset of that we're a region. We have to market our region for jobs and businesses and such. So it's a friendly area. So we can all complement each other and not compete, per se, against each other. Rising tide raises all boats. It's not a bad idea to have, Rich Smith today said, I would love to have more hotels in downtown Chicago. He thinks it'll help to do his business. And I know, from my experience in the art world, one gallery on the street doesn't do as well as if there's five or six. That creates a concentration of galleries that the people are so minded, hey, we can go here and get five or six and one block. And I've experienced that in other towns in Michigan. It isn't good. You just walk from one to another. You have a night like they have on Thursday nights in Harvard. It's a Big Zeke. You got various musician artists out on the street all over the town. And you can walk down the street and not worry about getting hit by a car. And you go to these various openings and such, and it's enjoyable. Point City has one too.
It's Gold Street.
Yeah, it's good for business. It's good for all the businesses. Not just the ones that are this page advertised. So, those are the kind of discussions we had today. How we're going to communicate and how we're going to embrace the future and not be scared of it. That's what I have. I got more meetings tomorrow and next week. Thank you.
Sure. First of all, I would take a moment to say thank you to the clerk's office, Susie Canine, who's not here, and your able assistant, Andrea, for successful coordination of the county elections. I think think they deserve a great applause or something, a recognition for the good work. So, okay. Would you put that in the minutes that we applauded the clerk's department? Ann Reed did a great job, helped by Susie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I gave you a handout. Please look at it closely with regard to Babe Lux. And the County Medical Care Facility may very well lose $2 million this year, and that is not a sustainable glide path to success. I gave copies of my report to our future commissioners. On the back is the solution to the problem. When you turn it over, you'll see the solution. Blank. Because I don't know the solution. That was my little, you know, yeah, thank you. But it's serious. That was the test. And I shouldn't make light because it's serious. And when I asked Anine about healthcare workforce, and the issue of signing bonuses elsewhere has an impact on her. Babe Lux has tried many strategies, but the fundamentals are that there are more than 50 people who like to come there, their families would like to get them there, and we can't take them. So I don't know the solution. I don't know that anybody knows the solution. If somebody knew the solution, they would be doing it. There are good people, hardworking people trying to adjust it, address it. So, at any rate, I, you know, when you see in my report on Babe Lux, I tend to focus on the financials, and I do that for a reason, because that is what we ultimately have to look at as a county, because it's our medical care facility, we are the landlord. With regard to the airport, as we discussed, or Pam discussed, the revenues are through the roof per gallon. Or gallon sales are flat, but it reflects the cost of the fuel. Like I mentioned, private jets go from Charleston to everywhere, and the most recent one that I was aware of went to Houston, and so that was a pretty good load of fuel in there. SkyWest, I understand, over which we have no control, but will be going back to tag flights with Alpina, as well, Alpina benefits, but it does create some, thank you very much, flight issues with local people. And the airport is busy with activities under Mr. Boyer and Ryan's watchful eyes that I won't try to summarize. With regard to the Board of Health, it is calm. The administrator will have a new contract. It's just the draft just came to us for to look at today. Scott Manson, he's the chairperson, so we will look at that, and I'm confident we will approve it next month. So I think that the Board of Health is stable. Matt and I have a role with regard to an obscure organization called the Sanitary Code Board of Appeals, which is in Emmett County. Each county has its own. So we are going to meet next week with Tammy, who's an employee, works with that as an administrative staff, along with Dan Farrell and probably Jill Allen shortly, the attorney, to discuss issues relating to Sanitary Code Board of Appeals, and I'm confident that we will resolve them, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Planning, we just approved the bylaws, but Tammy never rests, and so we now have a new packet of materials to review that she and staff and board members and the attorney have worked on to remove some outdated terminology and improve the quality of it. And it was the first use that I've ever seen in a county sentence where the word eudemosynary was applied. So I'll leave that as an assignment for everybody to A, spell it, and then B, yeah, use it in a sentence. It refers to charitable institutions, but it was in there. And so we only had one. Tony can certainly summarize the meeting. You want to summarize the actions at the meeting? I don't want to leave you.
You only had one action.
Right.
Three were postponed, so.
Well, I'll leave that one for you so everybody will know from you what happened.
I didn't write that.
What's that? Yeah. And Straight Regional Ride, the administrator sent out an email recently. I was unable to go to the meeting because I had a such bout of COVID that's here. But what she said that operating report shows a $10,000 loss
be shared according to the letter of understanding. She said, I'm not a finance person, but it's my understanding that because there was a surplus positive balance in previous year due to CARES funding, that after this lawsuit charged out to the counties, there would be no cost sharing. So Straits is a no cost. And as I was saying when Deneen was here, when you look at the numbers for Emma County, two-thirds of the people are seniors or disabled or both. And so they serve a population quite similar to what Franklin Center does. That's all I have. Thanks.
So as Charlie said, he did go through most of it. We did approve proposed meeting dates for 2023. We are working on proposals for zoning ordinance. There was just one case that was approved. Along with my ZBA, we only had one case, and that was approved. That was my last meeting, or November 8th was my last meeting for ZBA, because they will be meeting again December the 20th. So they will be in the courtroom, and I'll be here. I can't be at both places. So that was my last meeting.
You might want to mention what that one approval was.
I got to go back and look at that. Do you have it in your thing? I didn't bring it with me.
I brought the whole packet. No, it was simply a farmer's market on Saturdays at the Friendship Center.
There you go, Friendship Center. I couldn't remember what it all was, but the Friendship Center. ZBA was a change of ordinances, so, you know, approved in one and not approved in another, and we saw that it was something that could easily be approved at this point. So we did approve that. My PLIB, which is Paradise Lake Improvement Board, we reviewed budget and approved the budget for 2023. We reviewed the contract with the Lake Services, Restorative Lake Services contract. So that's done. And then the Road Commission. The Road Commission Board wanted to thank this county board for the approval of the $50,000 ARPA grants. Having an opportunity to work with the city, villages, and townships by utilizing those, and I'm remembering that they can do in-kind, right? Because we had a little bit of conversation about that. So that's another layer that we weren't even thinking about, but the Road Commission was at the meeting, that their in-kind can go with the $50,000. So there are at least three townships I know right now that are working with the Road Commission. As soon as we get our approval here at this end, they're all ready to jump onto that, because they're looking at asphalt purchases and things that they're going to do with road projects for 2023. So we're going to see that $50,000 being utilized quickly on road projects. So I'm very proud of this board accepting that and moving that forward. And they're very thankful, because they're already meeting with townships right now, trying to get the paperwork that they're going to need, not really knowing what everything is. We're going to approve that as soon as we get together, but I think we all have an idea of how to do that. So they did have, under their new business, they discussed approving the memorandum of agreement with the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians for Five Mile Creek under Lower Shore Drive and the Wycamp Creek under Lakeshore Drive. And really, they had a very limited budget or agenda, and they spent some time on the Road Commission discussing what the grant money means to them and moving forward with the cities, villages, and townships. And I'm done.
Chair, I have a question for Charlie. What's the tag flight?
Well, that's a great question. That's my understanding. It means that rather than the flight going from Pelston to Detroit, it starts at Alpena and then goes to Pelston and Detroit. I have no idea where that term comes from, but it just means it's just not Detroit, Pelston, Pelston, Detroit, back and forth. It incorporates Alpena, which they've done in the past. And then more recently they did Kanaba.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's, yeah, to Minneapolis, which was great for people who wanted to go to Minneapolis, who wanted to go to Mayo Clinic or something. So, I mean, I first time I heard that term was a few months ago. Yeah, so.
So the negative part of that is, are we losing revenue for that, or we're just going to lose passengers because
they
don't want to take another...
Well, the people that leave from Pelston would just like to go to Detroit.
Yeah.
And then people from Alpena, I think, for a while got nothing. And so they do benefit. But our sounds really flippant, but I love to say this, our authority ends at the top of the leaf of grass. You know, once it goes into the air, it's their world. And so we don't have anything to do with SkyWest except providing ground facilities. The thing that they get that changes is the essential air service, $1 million.
And so they have a contract. They've got to provide service to Pelston. And if I'm not mistaken, what they've done is the federal government has split that $1 million with Alpena. So they get half and we get half. That's my understanding. Is that correct? And so Alpena comes out of this with a flight. The issue is that in the middle of the winter, airplanes going around northern Michigan, you know. But the thing about Pelston, and this is the thing that if there's anything I focus on, is the runway. Because when a pilot from Detroit is leaving for Pelston and it's snowing and he's not sure what the runway friction is going to be, well, Jeff, Mallory, and the crew at Pelston know exactly what it's going to be, and with their equipment, they make sure that the airport is not the roadblock. And they do an excellent. I think only one flight last winter was canceled because of the airport. There were other ones, mechanical issues. But, so Alpena comes out of this with okay. It's people who are leaving from Pelston to Detroit leave at a different time of day. They get to Detroit at a much different time. And then their connecting flights are the next day.
Some,
yeah, that's the little downside. I know that from a person who sent me a hot note a couple weeks ago saying.
So, yes.
Correct. Way not cool.
That's an additional cost upon the passengers to have to rent a hotel room for the night.
Right.
And delay their trip.
Right.
Because Alpena hooked up.
Right, but
yeah.
And it's just
Well, Alpena was cool with making deals.
Well, but it's they didn't make deals. SkyWest did that on their own.
Yeah, they. We're told we're not.
Ryan talks to SkyWest, but I mean SkyWest is going to tell us what it's going to do and. Unless they want to have us little guys from the Experimental Aircraft Association put on our bomber jackets and they put larger type in the cockpits and, you know, handicap ramps for us. You know, until they get young pilots trained in position, it's going to be a real challenge.
Kind of
like
the deal we have
to
yeah.
We talked to our congressman.
But once again, SkyWest.
We have a chat with SkyWest.
But SkyWest is all over the country, and they cut out, I think it was a bunch of United airports. They just said, we're not even going to go there at all.
Yeah. We're pretty lucky that they still
So sometimes you think it's, we'd like better service, and they say, you get service. So
we didn't have any other bidders.
So, I mean, it's really a challenge. We don't have any bargaining power. For what it's worth, I didn't mention, but year-to-date, our passenger count is actually a down 14% from last year, but when we compare it with some previous years, it's okay. Like, for example, 2020, almost double what it was then. Of course, that was pandemic time. Down from 19, it's down from 18, it's up from 17. So it goes up and down, but it's not great, but... Yeah, so they are good, and I think the flights are generally full, too. And flying in and out of two northern Michigan airports in the winter doubles the issues of... Now, Alpena's got a great big long runway. Was that? Yeah.
Most of those flights coming in from Detroit are later. I've been on them.
Yeah. So that tells me.
My report is as follows. We had an area and agent meeting the first of the month. We approved restated bylaws. We needed to update them. They were quite old. We also had a succession plan for our executive director, which is required by the state. And she had her annual review and did quite well with a 4.5 out of 5. Two meetings today, one was in Bel Air, then the community mental health, which I couldn't make. It starts at 4 o'clock. Second is the community representative. Fisher Community Action Agency, again in Traverse City, the one in the town. The other report I have is the CCE Central Dispatch. We had a review of the 2023 budget and set a public hearing for December 21st. We also had some discussion regarding, Dave was on a committee with other administrators, regarding the towers that CCE has, and with the new system going in, some of those towers may become surplus and not needed. The administrators are working more and giving a report on that to the board. We had a, as you know, we've hired TSSI to do a new RFP for the 911 system. They are working with all of the agencies, EMS, fire, police, sheriffs, to get an RFP out so that we can bid it. Nothing new regarding the issues that we're having with the software provider that was under control. That is one of those are my reports. We are now down to public comment. We wish to come before the board. In 3 minutes, state your name. Someone is rushing to the board. Now the announcements, the next Board of Commissioners meeting will be held on November 28th. 2022 at 6 p.m. in the Board of Commissioners Room 200 Division Street, Toski 49770. I would like to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving and drive safely tonight and to anywhere you're going around for Thanksgiving. And looking for a motion to adjourn. I think we don't even have to call roll call on that. We are adjourned.